have a topic or a guest that you'd like to hear on Spaced Out Radio, let us know at spacedoutradio.com, where you can sign up to become a Space Traveler member today. Or you can find us on Twitter at Spaced Out Radio and on our Facebook page, Spaced Out Radio Show. Welcome back to Spaced Out Radio. Tonight I am your host, Dave Scott. Good to have you along for the ride. Tomorrow night, Samantha Mowat, the ET Experience, joins us live as she is on holidays in Scotland. But she is still going to join us live tomorrow night on this show, starting at 9 p.m. Pacific, midnight Eastern time. Hope you're all here at spacedoutradio.com, because Samantha joins us the second Tuesday of every month. Bill Cardwell has set the password for tonight, and it is impossible. I'm going to butcher this so bad. I knew it right off the bat. Heterokthonus. I have no idea what it means. Bill does this little game every night with the SOR password to try and stump me. And I'm not a fan of it. I'm not a fan. Yet he does it night after night. I'm not even going to say it. I'll say it in the next hour. What the hell? Hey, if you want to follow us on Twitter, you can do so at Spaced Out Radio. Give our Facebook page a like, Spaced Out Radio Show. On Instagram, I can be followed at Dave Scott, S-O-R. Subscribe to our YouTube channel, Spaced Out Radio Show. And our website is spacedoutradio.com. You can also tune us in on TuneIn, as well as download this podcast on iTunes, literally about 10 minutes after the show is done. On our website, you could sign up for the SOR Space Travelers Club. It's only $5 a month. With that, you get access to private group interviews. Your name gets put into monthly prize draws. You get access to special posting sections on our website, and so much more. Hey, we're going to give you a hell of a lot more than just access to our archives. You can also read up on our latest blogs. Check out the SOR Space Wire by Eric Markham. And if you've had a sighting and you would like someone to investigate it, doesn't matter if it's Bigfoot, paranormal, UFOs, extraterrestrials, garden gnomes moving, fill out an SOR Sightlines report. Our investigator, our chief investigator, Mike Schmidt, will get a hold of you, and he will get back to you with a report. Everything is 100% confidential. So after I butchered that password once again, thank you, Bill Cardwell, we're going to bring in Michel Deschamps from Newfors.com. He's a Canadian ufologist. He works specifically on trying to figure out what the hell is going on in the skies above. Michel, welcome back.
Thanks, Dave. I'm happy to be back.
I'm still a little miffed that Bill Cardwell on Canadian Thanksgiving here. You know, we're supposed, because he's a Maple Leafs fan. And I know you don't do hockey, but you know as well as I do.
Yeah.
Even if you don't do hockey in this country, you know, there's either two people in this country. There's the ones who love the Leafs and the ones who don't. You know,
yeah.
And it tells you a lot, if, you know, for setting a password like that. You know, it really does. So that's all I'm going to say about that. By the way, you also stated that, you know, a lot of people like sports statistics and forget about ufology. I am one of the few who could do both, my friend. I can quote the stats and ufology at the same time. So I'm going to take a little round of applause for that from me. So thank you. I appreciate that. Thank you. Thank you. Anyways, I am going to move on with you here. For the next few minutes, I want to talk about Canada's role in ufology. We have some very talented people across our great land who have studied this field, from Charles Lamoureux in Vancouver to Grant Cameron to Chris Rutkowski to Stanton Friedman, who's a Canadian citizen living in Nova Scotia, to yourself. What is Canada's role in the field of ufology and disclosure, do you think?
Oh, boy. I can only speak for myself, and I inadvertently found out that Henry McKay was actually a leading Canadian authority on physical landing trace cases. His niece, Michelle McKay, who's a professional ghost hunter, paranormal investigator, also became a UFO researcher investigator because of him, because he was more of a dad to her than her father, I guess. Or they had he had fascinating stories that she enjoyed, and she had fascinating stories that he enjoyed. But actually, we're supposed to collaborate apparently on rehashing or reinvestigating a famous landing case on the Quebec side, on a place called Chapeau, which is the French word for hat, on this small island across the border from Pembroke, Ontario. In 1969, there was this circular formation that was found, large donut shape formation next to a tree. And I was there. I was at that site passing through to go to Gatineau, where my parents now live. Everybody packed up except me. I stayed behind because of my research primarily, and the rest of the family moved back to Quebec. And on the way to Gatineau, we stopped at Chapeau and tried to locate this this famous, one of the many, many, many famous landing sites. Could never find it. But turns out that I know a Mr. Dominic Demers, who's a photographer, him and his wife, and Dominic was actually born in that area. And he remembers the case very, very well. So he may be, and he happens to be a cameraman who used to work for our local TV station for many years and now does freelance for TV Ontario and the French TV Ontario. He wants to tag along one day to just go drive down there and see if we can locate the site ourselves. I just want to see if there's any traces left. Sometimes at these sites, the radiation or whatever causes the soil to be dehydrated, the plants won't grow for many, many years. So I'm kind of wondering if that circle is there. So Michelle McKay asked me if I wanted to tag along with her, and that's how I found out who she was. That actually I had met her uncle. Actually, I saw him in person, I believe, just before he passed away in 2005. But before that, I actually received letters from him. He was the first Canadian to actually give a course on UFOs for credit, and did a lot for ufology. Chris Rutkowski, being a skeptic, in this particular case, it's a good thing because he has to separate the wheat from the chaff when it comes to UFO reports, and he puts out the annual survey of the preceding year's sighting reports, which I think we're the only country to do that. There may be some other countries that are following suit, but I'm not aware of that at the moment. Grant Cameron has a website called presidentialufo.com, basically dealing with presidents and what they know and what they knew about UFOs. In Quebec, I know Marc Saint-Germain, who's part of a member of MUFON, and Yann Vadney, who is part of GARPA, another ufological group in Quebec. There's also the AQU, Association Québécoise Ufologie. I've actually translated from French to English an article about a report, a humanoid case, actually, that took place in 1998 near Montreal at a place called Grand-Mère, Quebec. So that English Canada could find out about this report, about this encounter with two occupants. So I guess we each do our bit in collating and gathering all this information of what's going on across the country. But like I said before, if we're getting only 10% of the reports, only 10% of the reports get reported publicly, then there's 90% that go unreported because of fear of the fear factor, the ridicule factor, and whatever else. especially professionals, won't report a sighting because they're in a professional field and they don't want to, you know, you feel kind of icky after reporting something and you go back to work the next day. And, you know, if you haven't done that yourself for many years like I have, I couldn't care less what people think of me. If I'd lived my life based on what other people thought, I don't think I'd be doing what I do. You know, I love public speaking. I don't have a chance to do it that often now, but I plan to get back into it because it's a passion of mine. It's probably my biggest passion. Also had to make a lot of sacrifices. Never married, don't have kids. Because this took, it's a huge bubble around myself, and there's very little room for anything else other than my full-time job at Walmart. And so it takes a toll. It does take a toll. It takes a toll on you, and you do make a lot of sacrifices, but hopefully in the end, it'll be all worth it. And I think that all us researchers in Canada, as well as elsewhere around the world, whether we're attempting to put the states to shame or not, we're putting out our data. We're informing people on what's been happening worldwide, not just locally. And it's an important mission. It's a mission that, or a destiny or a passion that just drives you. No matter what the pitfalls are, you get up and you go. You just keep on going, and until there's nothing else to look at, you know?
There has been numerous sightings across Canada of a large extent. Yet, in some way, across this country, we've swept them under the rug. The biggest being Shag Harbor in 1967, October 3rd, in Nova Scotia, where a large UFO crashed into the Shag Harbor Bay. And believe it or not, they sent divers down there, and they said that they actually saw extraterrestrials working on that craft underwater. The RCMP were all over the place, the military was there, and then poof, the ship took off and just disappeared like nothing had ever happened. That was our Roswell. Fast forward to just a year ago, when there was a lot of hype that a UFO had crashed into Lake Winnipeg in Manitoba. The military went scurrying there. Chris Rutkowski doesn't believe it was a UFO. Grant Cameron doesn't believe it was a UFO. Yet a lot of people do believe that the military just doesn't go to that area for training in the middle of dead winter. What's your thoughts?
Well, I don't believe it's a real UFO either, because I spoke to, I didn't get a chance to speak to anybody there of the First Nation, but I have a friend of mine who's an abductee, and she's First Nation, and there'd be no bones about it. She would come right out and tell me through contacts and stuff whether or not there had been something there. And as far as we know, I don't think it was real. The pictures we saw were CGI'd into the, you know, the military will do all kinds of maneuvers, you know, winter training, survival stuff, mock airplane crashes. Who knows what it was? There's other cases where it has been very, very weird on how many military would be in one particular town. Something happened in Blind River, where for almost 2 weeks the military were there for this mock exercise about a collision between a regular vehicle and a tanker truck carrying some kind of PCBs or something. And as it turns out, they were using some kind of a sonar device to pierce through the ice on a frozen lake because something had fallen in. And I found it curious, and my contact at Mississauga First Nation found it curious that the hotels were all booked and the military were there for 2 weeks. And after everything was done, they just packed up and left, and nothing was said or investigated as to why the military was there. Now, that was something pretty weird. And Blind River, I need to mention this. When I met my friend there in 1997, We went there investigating her abduction reports, and we had two sightings that very same night. And ever since then, I turned to my buddy Todd and I says, listen, whenever she says anything to us, we're going to believe her hands down, because we were there. We had two sightings. And at first, I couldn't figure out why there'd be sightings there. But then as it turns out, there's a nuclear refinery plant just across the road. It used to be called the El Dorado Nuclear Refinery, but now it's called Systems Management Environmental or something, like a name that you wouldn't even suspect had anything to do with nuclear. And we in the ufological world know that there's been a long association with UFOs and anything nuclear. So that would explain a lot of why the sightings in and around Blind River. But the other surprising fact that I found out was that the consultant to Project Blue Book, Jalen Hynek, actually had a camp there, and it's still there. And I would have thought, well, okay, he's an American. Couldn't there be any other nice places in the States where he could have had his camp? Why would he have his camp at Lake DeBorn, which is only 15 kilometers north of Blind River? As it turns out, he apparently coined the place as one of the hotspots, prime hotspots of UFO sightings in Ontario. And last year, or the year before, I happened to be in Blind River visiting my friend, and she told me, let's go to the local art gallery, because the guy, the curator of the art gallery, actually knows the Hynek family, has known them for many years, and I want to try to see if I can go to that camp to meet the sons of Jalen Hynek. I don't know if it's a research facility or if it's an actual camp, but we were in the art gallery, which is no bigger than 20 feet by 20 feet, small place. And just as I mentioned that we were looking to find out if we could meet the Hynek family, he turns around and says, oh, by the way, Jalen Hynek's daughter is here. And there she was. So I got to meet Rosalind, Roxanne. Anyways, I have a picture. We took a selfie, and she came all the way from Boston, Massachusetts, in this art gallery. It's, you know, a small place. And I thought, well, you know, and she explained how she misses her dad. And, you know, we all know about the big fiasco. And, you know, he coined the term swamp gas. And for many years after that, after he had been gone from skeptic to believer, he regretted ever saying that about the Michigan sightings, the Dexter, Michigan sightings in 1966, or Hillsdale, Michigan. Blind River is a good primary spot. And while I was there, I also walked away with Bigfoot reports. So I says, holy shit, the big guy is not just out west in the Rockies. He's all over the map. So, you know, and there's been this long association too with UFO sightings at general areas where Bigfoot had also been seen. So for many, many years, some people thought maybe there was an association between the two. You know, maybe Bigfoot was a UFO pilot or something that was let go by the occupants of a UFO to see if it could proliferate and survive. I basically personally think it's something that branched off of us, or we branched off of it over time. But all these encounters, so Blind River is fascinating. Being here in Sudbury is fascinating. And I've heard of some of the encounters and the happenings in BC, the super large UFO that was seen in the Yukon in 1996, December 11th. And Shag Harbor, well, that's one I've heard of many cases where two saucers were actually seen. One was actually assisting the other, which seemed to be in trouble. Well, I suspect the same thing happened to the one and only landing case that I investigated on Manitoulin Island in the Great Lakes, where two objects landed side by side. And I tend to think that maybe one was in mechanical difficulty and a second one came down to assist it. So I'm not so surprised to hear about Shag Harbor having been the site of two objects being seen by scuba divers, and with the thick yellow foam at the surface, which is a byproduct of whatever energy field is around the craft and, you know, caused a chemical reaction with the water, with contacting, making contact with salt water, and you know, evidence that's as fleeting as angel hair was. You know, angel hair was a byproduct of UFOs in the 50s and 60s, and again, it couldn't be contained; it would dissipate fairly rapidly after you'd bottle it up in a pill bottle or something. So there's a lot of evidence, a lot of cases in Canada that, you know, are just fascinating, and they'll go down in the history books as long as people are willing to look at it that way, as being historical fact and not fiction.
And I think that's the problem, is everybody, when they look at a crash, they think of Roswell. They don't look into their own backyards. And yet there isn't a lot of information found around, besides maybe, you know, the local bookstore, that not the chain, but the bookstore, where they may carry someone's book on a, you know, a smaller author's book or something along those lines. So yeah. I guess what I'm saying is, how are people up here supposed to know about what is happening in Canadian ufology if we're not given any information, and the public really doesn't talk about it?
Yeah. Well, the public, the thing is, that you kind of open the door for them. I found over time that if you stay quiet, everybody stays quiet. But as soon as you mention something, then people will overhear. It's gotten better. I remember days when, way before, years ago, when I used to be, whether it's a coffee shop, Tim Hortons or whatever, I'd be whispering across the table talking to my friends. But now, as soon as you talk a little bit louder and people overhear your conversation, they're actually willing to engage you and talk more than they would have done like 10, 20 years ago. It's like a door opening, and then people might have 50 people on the same street that have seen something. They won't say a damn word, but then as soon as somebody speaks up, then all the other witnesses seem to come out of the woodwork, and then the one single person who initially came out doesn't feel as bad or isolated anymore, because they realize that they're not alone in having seen something. And that's an important thing to have happen more often. A lot of people internalize or personalize their sighting, just like they would for a religious experience, that it was meant for them. And I keep telling them, say, well, you may not be aware that there may be other witnesses that have seen the same thing as you have. And it's important to speak out about it, because you don't want anybody to feel like they're going crazy or that this is nonsensical and doesn't make sense, doesn't belong here, or it's all fake. And so it's part of our responsibility as UFO researchers to educate, as well as collect the information. You use it to educate people. If you can go speak in schools, try to reach, in my particular case, I try to go online on as many online radio programs as I can. Not to boast, not just to boast about my website, because I see a lot of websites and I see a lot of stuff that's non-verified. I try to stick with the facts. There's a few things on there that people may not agree with, but I don't even have a speculations page. You know, I have a page or an explanation on how this has affected my religious beliefs, how it's changed me over time, what got me involved in the space. Well, simply because I remember seeing the live first man on the moon, the live footage on TV, 1969, July 21st. And that stuck with me. And anybody saying that we never went and it was all faked, they're full of BS. You know, on my website, I've actually placed two interviews or self-interviews with a filmmaker who actually explains in a filmmaker's way on how they could not have faked the footage back then, because they had no high-speed cameras in the late 60s. That it would have been cheaper to send people to the moon. And one of our greatest heroes, my greatest heroes, was Dr. Edgar Mitchell, who passed away recently. My friend, one of my buddies today just told me that some letter was leaked about him contacting Podesta about about aliens not wanting and not will not allow any of our violence to go out in space, whether we use nuclear weapons or something, and somehow they'll intercede. I'm hoping this will happen. I've always kind of believed that, or hoped there'd be some kind of universal justice that sort of steps in and say, okay, you know, we're quarantined or we're limited to do this or limited to do that. But that's them. For us researchers, we're not limited to anything. We should at any cost use our information that we've gathered and educate people so that we can bring them all on the same page, and using facts more than just supposition or speculation. And tell them that it's okay to report these things openly. It's okay to talk about it, because otherwise you're just serving you're doing exactly what the military wants you to do, which is to stay quiet and help with the cover up, you know, inadvertently helping with the cover up by just staying quiet. And so, it's not always easy to have people come out and report their sighting. I mean, it's like twisting somebody's arm, and it shouldn't be that way. You know, it's funny how people are so reluctant to report the UFO sightings, but yet they talk about Jesus as if they know him. Religion is like end all be all kind of situation. And yet, you know what? I tell them, I don't even have a single photograph of Jesus walking anywhere, but I have photographs of UFOs. I have more evidence, more physical evidence for UFOs than I do of Jesus. But yet, I have my own personal belief. I side with the aliens. I look at the entire universe as a supreme being. And so, it changes you on all sides, and you have to sort of, you know, maybe tuck away some of that personal belief, but you have to use your information to educate people. It's the only way that we can, and I think I've mentioned this before, a civilization cannot survive divided. We survive as a whole. We continue as a whole. And if we want to see any time past the 21st century, we have to band together and not let the military or the powers that be divide us and tell us that this is not so, and that what they say goes. You know, you have to go against the grain sometimes and do what's best for mankind, and never mind what they're telling you to do. Like, you know, stay dummied down, don't talk about it, look the other way. That's basically how I feel.
I have a couple questions coming in for you from the Space Out Radio chat rooms. This one from John. He is saying, Dave, can you please ask Michael, which is you, or Michelle, which is you.
Yeah.
Have you ever met or interviewed anyone who claimed to be an extraterrestrial?
No.
Would you like to?
You know what? I've asked this question to my friends. And I don't even know what to look for. Well, I guess I'm pretty observant. I would look for, if I were to meet somebody who would say that they're an alien being, I would hope to know that there's a difference, like whether they have fingerprints or not, whether they have vertical slits in their eyes, their pupils are vertical slits, you know, some oddity in the way they speak, like monotone, or like what's been reported with the Men in Black, the real Men in Black, not like the ones from the movies. I don't know how I would feel to encounter, and it's funny because I know people who've actually seen beings, like my friend from Inco. He has had two sightings of UFO occupants. My friend from Blind River, well, she's an abductee, so she's had experiences there. But myself, I don't know how I would react. My gut instinct and my sixth sense would probably tell me right off the bat that there's something odd about this particular person if I were to meet one, but I'm not sure how I would react. It'd be an interesting thing to, because I've never seen, in any of the sightings I've had, I've never seen the occupants ever. But I've been wondering about that. Like, how would I react if I saw that? Because it's definitely one step beyond from just seeing their vehicles.
The next question coming out of the SOR Space Travelers Club is, have you ever received any reports or done any investigation into black-eyed kids and their relation to UFOs?
No, I've heard some of the papers that were written about them. I'm still not sure if they're even related to UFOs. Like, there's so many things, there's so many phenomena. The ghosts, like, you've got ghosts, you've got demons. The most interesting story recently is I was at my friend's place and we were going for a walk. We were going for supper. He was treating me to supper because he was celebrating the fact that he was debt free. And then his neighbor walked out, beautiful, beautiful blonde lady. And she says, are you the owner of the car with the license plate and UFO man and the alien sign on the side? I said, yeah. And she blurted out three words that made my friend turn tail. Are you saved? She was a Christian, and she basically told me that the aliens are actually demons and that God or Jesus is the only way to the truth and all that. And I basically tried to tell her, I says, no, you know what? Demons are a different entity than aliens altogether, just as ghosts are, just as Bigfoot is, and because there's many realms, many existences, many, many dimensions. And somebody like that, it just wouldn't understand, and they just can't accept that. So they're stuck in their little tiny box. To go back to that, the black-eyed kids, I don't think they're UFO related, although there's a lot of odd things going on this planet. Like, this planet is like almost like magical. You know, we had something like the Bermuda Triangle that was working for a while, where planes would disappear and boats would disappear, never to be found. You've got the Great Lakes Triangle. You have the Cadborosaurus, you know, off the coast of Vancouver. Sea serpents, Loch Ness, the Ogopogo. I mean, there's tons of stuff we don't know anything about. And we don't know where they originate from or if they're all indigenous to this planet. Some stuff freaked me out more than others. Like, I tell people, don't play with Ouija boards because it's a portal to, I don't know how it works, but it works. Whether you create a Ouija board out of paper or it's made out of wood, you don't play with those things because this is something that will unleash something that you will not be able to get rid of. Ghosts are different. I believe they're people that die a tragic death of some kind, and they have unfinished business and are stuck here. Black-eyed kids, I don't know what the hell they are, but it's pretty creepy. I don't personally think they're related to UFOs. They seem too ominous for that even. Because what I get from UFO occupants is that the great majority of them are all benevolent. You know, if there was any evilness in any of them, we would have been done over many years ago. You know, whether they have the ability to time travel back to a time when we're less weaponized than now, or even now, I don't think we'd stand a chance, and we would have been obliterated already if that was their purpose. So I don't think that's them. I don't think they're part of the ufological circle. So I can't explain what the black-eyed kids are. They it's very terrifying, almost. It's almost like they're linked somehow to the demonic side of things from the reports I've read.
I brought a theory up to Victor Vigiani in regards to Canadian ufology, and he was like, where did you come up with that? And I said, doing this show. That theory is, we here up in Canada, and I have no scientific background behind this, we seem to have a lot more benevolent type encounters. Yet, if you cross the border into the United States, the majority of extraterrestrial encounters seem to be of some sort of malevolency. We all know Whitley Strieber's stories. We all see how it's played out in Hollywood. We all seen South Park episode where, you know, it's supposed to be after Whitley getting the anal probe. Anyways, the whole thing that I'm trying to say here is, do you think that there is something to do with the fact that maybe, just maybe, Eisenhower did cut that deal, which was humans for technology, and that's the reason why Americans seem to be having a lot more negative experiences compared to, say, a country like Canada, where the experiences seem to be more benevolent than of anything negative?
Well, if there was a deal that was struck, I think the deal was broken because on the part of the aliens, I think that it's a matter of survivability. And they could circumvent any kind of security we would have anyway. So if they were to continue abducting, if the what broke the deal was the fact that they were abducting a lot more people than they were told, quote unquote, to abduct. Well, for whatever program this is, this abduction phenomenon, apparently, our side didn't really like what we saw or what was being reported. The occupants in the States, the occupant reports in the States are not as terrifying as the ones in South America, for instance. In Brazil, first of all, it seems to me that the alien factions, there's about four or five of them, if you want to generalize things and split it up, they seem to have divvied up the planet amongst themselves. You've got the Nordic people, were the most human-looking ones that seem to be concentrating themselves on the European area. You've got the reptilians that are down, not in the White House, like some people I know would claim that the reptilians are running the White House. No, the reptilians are down in Brazil, and they're very aggressive. Very aggressive reports of reptilians in some of the encounters in the States. But in Brazil, there's been many, many cases where smokers would go outside and light up a cigarette, and the UFOs would swoop down and try to grab them. And they'd be using beam technology. One would be a red beam. It's either red or green. The one beam, whatever color it is, I think it's green, would hold down the person, and the red beam would be lasering through their flesh. There's a one particular case where a man melted like a candle right in front of his wife. After many reports like that, people were basically told not to go outside and light up a cigarette because it seems to be attracting the UFOs, and they're swooping down for the kill, so to speak. The little gray entities, which vary in size from 3.5 feet tall to 5 feet tall, they're pretty well seen like all over the States and Canada. More involved in the abduction phenomena than some of the one timers, as I call them. Like I said, I've separated the aliens on my website by the fact that there is a great majority that were seen that were never seen again. And then on a separate page is where I have the abduction performing ones, or the ones that were involved in a lot of the abductions that may be in charge of the group or their whole procedure, or they're just there to observe. You have the reptilian ones, you have the praying mantis ones, you have the, you have some that look like little old men. There's a whole bunch. It's almost like a zoo at times, because you have more of them look more like insectoid than anything else. And you know, what does a primate have in common with an insect? No more so than with a reptilian. We'd probably have something more in common, or being able to be more approachable if we look similar, like the Nordics, who are mostly more muscular than us, a little slightly taller or very much taller and more muscular in appearance. I think that somehow amongst themselves they've divvied up the planet, and you have some cases where that are very, very terrifying. initially, but that's because also because of lack of education. If we had been told from the get-go that beings were coming here and abducting people, and it was just a tweaking, like there's an hybridization program going on as well. Like I said before, my personal belief is that some of them are on the brink of extinction, and they're doing anything they can to prolong their lifespan, even if they have to mix their genes with something else. And the other side is beings that are just they're just here for they're tweaking us over time. They've had a hand in our creation, and it's a way by which they monitor us. Sometimes I wish they, if they had the technology to do that, remove our bad traits, leaving us completely benevolent and giving us more of a nurturing attitude towards the planet than the way it's been. I still personally think amongst the, if you put the aliens together with the humans, I think we're the most violent species there ever was. Because we've done how many millions of people have we killed during World War II, and how many murders take place every year? How many assaults, sexual or otherwise, take place? Besides the fact that we're raping the earth for every natural resources and not replenishing it, we seem to be going for gasoline and oil as if the earth could produce the endlessly the supply, just like we reproduce blood when we get a transfusion, like blood work done on us, whatever. It's all weird and very complex, and I don't claim to know all the answers. It just seems to me that there's four or five factions that have divided up the planet, and although some encounters seem terrifying, a lot of the times I believe it's because we weren't told that this was going to happen, that this has been happening for many years. I mean, the reports of elves stealing children back in the 1800s is no more different than what's happening in modern day times with these abduction cases. And, if it was something really malevolent, I think we'd see a lot more disappearances that we couldn't account for than there have been, but I still think that between them and us, I think humans are the most violent ones, and I'm more afraid of humans than I am of aliens.
Well, let me ask you this then, because I do believe that there are some extraterrestrials out there that are wreaking havoc on people. Why do you think we've never gone back to the moon?
Oh, that's easy. That's because there's a base on the far side of the moon. There's a base that's I think I heard this initially from Robert Dean, Major Robert Dean of NATO, who stated that there's a complex on the other side of the moon that is very, very large. It consists of several buildings that are miles wide, and there's at least four different races that are there. I personally believe that's where they took Travis Walton, because travel time, he was only gone for a week, and to travel at the speed that they travel, to even reach 37 light years, it would take 2 weeks or more. If he was gone for 5 days, they couldn't have gone really far, and when he found himself in a hangar where other ships were parked and could see the stars and stuff, I would assume that's where they took him. He obviously wasn't on another ship, because, he could have been on another ship that was really large and looked like a hangar that contained several other smaller ships. We were basically warned off. I remember the communications officer, Marie Chatelain, saying that there's not a single time when the astronauts were not followed to and from the moon by UFOs. And that there's a complex on the far side, which is a perfect, and it's not the only base they have. They have bases off the coast of Russia. They have bases under the oceans off the coast of Catalina Island and near California. They're all almost like duck blinds. They're in perfect imperfect areas where we can't access, and yet they can keep an eye on us, younger siblings or younger people. We're still, like I said before, we're just basically getting over the bars of the crib, you know, claiming that we're all that and we're ready to explore space and take part in whatever's out there, when I don't think we are. And they know that too. And so these are just duck blinds, places where they can keep an eye on us without alerting us to their presence. So for some reason, the choreography of the moon showing just the one side and never being able to see the backside is perfectly convenient for them to have a base there. And same thing with the oceans. I mean, a submarine will implode at a certain depth, but there's been UFOs that have been tracked on sonar going extremely fast at very, very very, very deep down in as deep as the Mariana Trench. And so they're perfectly camouflaged, perfectly technologically advanced to do stuff like that. And it's, to me, it's just basically keeping an eye on us. Because like I said before, if they wanted to take the planet over, first of all, sometimes I kind of welcome them to take over the planet, because we've done a really lousy job at caretaking for this planet. And I'm sure that they have the technology to totally terraform this planet to make it as pristine as it was before man was ever here. So the base is on the moon, and that was enough reason to not go back. Now they said, well, why did we go back an additional three times? Well, they had the missions planned. They actually had seven missions planned, but the ones they did it in a very, very short time, and then never went back. And if they claim we're going back now with manned missions, they're lying. They'll only be sending probes. Unless, of course, like Richard Dolan says, there's a breakaway civilization that has technology that they've back-engineered from UFOs, and we're exploring space like the TV show Stargate, but not necessarily using a Stargate, and doing stuff like tickling the dragon's belly, and hope to God that they don't bring back with them something that's even more violent than whatever's been encountered so far. You know, the arrogance of the military or whatever they have, if there is such a thing as a space team or whatever, they'll be biting off way more than they can chew, and we can't afford to do too much too quickly like that without being prepared or to know what's out there first. And so no wonder we're under quarantine and we're being observed to see what we're going to do next. And Major Robert Dean also said that he personally believes that there is another race that actually will intercede when if too much shit hits the fan. There's one particular race, I don't know which type, but they will step in. And that's another thing too. People claiming to know who's what, they look at a UFO picture and say, okay, this is being piloted by the reptilians, or this is what the reptilians eat, this is what the Nordics eat. I say bullshit on that, because if we knew all the answers to what the name of their species are, what the name of their home planet is, it's all made up. We don't have that information. They're not volunteering that information to us, because why should we? We're a superior, we're an inferior life form. We're just starting off in this great journey of doing space travel, and they've been doing it for a very, 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 very long time. And so we may not be ready yet. And so the moon is just a stepping stone, but who knows if we'll really go to Mars, or we'll suffer the fate of Phobos 2, which disappeared after it photographed this 15.5-mile-long UFO. There's aliens out there that are warding us off. They're out there patrolling and making sure that our brand of hostility doesn't make it out there.
Couple questions. We only got about 5 minutes here before we got to go to break, and I think this is an important one from Gail here for her first of two questions. She is asking, Michelle, where did you get your details about ET's plans? Didn't you say that you have never met any personally?
Well, I follow what Linda Howe. Linda Howe has talked to a lot of abductees, and abductees have said, I could read off one of the information where it says that they've had to. I'll have to find the notes, I guess. But the one particular abductee came back with information she was given about how the species had to go out and seek out compatible bipeds with which to match genes, because they were either sickly or they had gone through nuclear wars of their own, I guess, or something that made them realize that they could no longer survive or sustain themselves the way they were going. So they've had to go outside of their species and try to see if they could find compatibility with other bipedal creatures to better themselves genetically and fix whatever problem they may have health-wise. I've read reports, like I said, abductees, I would trust more of the information coming out from an abductee than somebody else who claims to know a lot when they don't know anything at all. I've been led by the nose before by somebody who claimed to know a lot, and I found out that he knew absolutely nothing, and that I could stand on my own 2 feet and do my own research myself. With the alien information, I mean, there's very little. I have a collection of alien figurines that I bought from Florida, and they come with a collection card, and it basically gives the basic stats, like their height, whether they have vertical slits for eyes or whatever. Turns out that most of the species are all telepathic, which is another level of development that we haven't quite successfully attained yet, which is why they're able to speak to you telepathically in whatever language you speak. If you're German, they'll speak to you in German. If you're French, they'll speak to you in French. It's basic information that anybody who's willing to do the research will find out about some of these species, but the multitude of other species we know nothing about. But because of their appearances, sometimes it looks more like a zoo, because some of them look like frogs or lizards or praying mantises.
Gail's second question is, where did you find out the information about all the bases on the moon?
From Major Robert Dean. And also, there was a code word for when the astronauts made, I think the astronauts from Apollo 13 as well, they detected something on the moon on the far side, there was a code word. There was Santa Claus and Bogey. And that was one of the things that was mentioned when they went around the moon and had to slingshot back to Earth, as they said, there is a Santa Claus. And that was one of the tip-offs that there is probably truth to something like having a huge complex on the moon. Plus, there's been some photographs I've seen of something that seems to be doing mining of some type, some kind of mining on the moon, like super large structures. And Mike Barra talks about structures on the moon as well as the structures on Mars. I know for a fact that NASA has been lying about water on Mars, for instance. I know for a fact that there's an active geyser of water on Mars. And why do I know this? A friend of mine from a neighboring town actually ordered a publication by Vincent DiPietro and Greg Molinar. They were the two discoverers of the original picture of the face on Mars. And they put together this manual of before, during, and after photos of this active geyser on Mars. And so there's been water there all along. But we've been held back in terms of that knowledge, just like I believe we've been held back about the knowledge about these Earth-type planets. I believe they've known about planets for a very long time, but they're just subsequently releasing bit by bit by bit, just so that we can get accustomed to hearing the news that, who, they found another planetary system. You know, how could they be so naive to believe that we're so naive to think that there's no other solar system out there with life forms? Life is just all over the place.
And on that note, we're going to hop out for a break here at the top of the hour. You're listening to Michel Deschamps, newofours.com. I'm your host, Dave Scott. 1 hour to go right after this.